Few playwrights have done as much to bring the Asian experience to the contemporary American stage as David Henry Hwang, with such works as FOB and M. Butterfly. In the pair of one-act plays called Sound and Beauty, he takes us inside Japan in reality and in legend and looks at the energies that draw people together. Tori Kinoshita is the director of the upcoming Kumu Kahua production, and she's with us in CR7 this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I get the impression that these plays have a kind of a mystical aura. Is that right?
The first one, The Sound of a Voice, certainly does. It's set in the 1700s in Japan, and it's vaguely expressionistic.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of overt symbolism, and we're using some movements, as was done in the original production. So,
what kind of movements? You mean sort of dance-related gesture?
Butoh-inspired, because actual
really?
Butoh would be, 20 years. And our uh-huh. dancer doesn't have 20 years of Butoh practice. But
but movement is as a means of advancing the story, advancing the movement.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And it functions expressionistically in that we're seeing sort of the subjective viewpoint of the man as he comes apart and unravels, and his objective is, threatened by falling in love with this woman, et cetera.
How many characters in this one?
So there's the two characters, and then we have a mover, and then the same with the other play, House of Sleeping Beauties, a man and a woman, and a mover.
What are the common threads, if any, between these two?
Oh gosh, plays? There's so many. There's
really?
So oh yeah, not just in the dialogue, but also in the premise. In both plays, there's a man that's coming to essentially destroy a woman, and he ends up being changed or falling in love with her. And then sort of in the first play, they both lose. And in the second play, they both win because it's, it's love, right? Love is cannot be conditional. There's no win or lose paradigms. It's you both win or you both lose.
So. Hard to predict, too. Hard to predict the outcomes, right?
No, indeed. It's fascinating, too, because in some of the research I did, a lot of critics point to these two plays, which are indeed his first theatrical forays out of the Chinese-American perspective, as precursors to the role of Song Li Ling in M. Butterfly, the two female characters being precursors to the role of Song Li Ling. And thinking of it in those terms, it actually makes quite a bit of sense, because in both plays, it is actually the woman that is in control, and it is her, power sort of that is threatening the male gender role identity. And
well, for people who aren't familiar with M. Butterfly, how explain that a little bit, if you will, how they're precursors. What are the character traits that make them precursors?
M. Butterfly is another brilliant play by Henry David Hwang, and it's about a French spy that falls in love with what he thinks is a beautiful Chinese opera performer, and then he finds out, of course, that she's sort of spying on him, and that she's in fact a man. Mm-hmm. And then it's sort of also about how the West is always feminizing the East, and so it was natural to put us this man in this female character role, so to speak. And then so the fact that in M. Butterfly, the central character Gallimard believes that it's him that's in control, and he's protecting this little fragile delicate Song Li Ling,
China doll.
Right, exactly,
the China doll cliche, right?
Exactly. Oh, it's so brilliant. And then, but ultimately, it's Song Li Ling who is.
She's pulling the strings.
Yeah, pulling the strings, right? So the idea that these two characters, these two women, are precursors to Song Li Ling, to me rings very true, because, of course, it's not till sort of the plays progress where the men begin to become aware of the fact that they are, in fact,
that strings are being pulled.
Strings are being pulled.
It sounds eerily similar to real life.
Dude.
There got to be some parallels there, right?
Little,
would you think,
yes.
Tori?
Yeah, the universal.
Well, I guess
human
that's what theater is for, right?
Right.
You were telling me that both men in these two one actors come to the women with what you described as kind of a destructive intent. Is that right?
Yeah, they do. They do.
In what way? I mean, how are they seeking to destroy, do harm?
In the sound of a voice, the samurai is seeking out to gain glory by killing what he's heard is a witch in the woods.
Ah.
And then in House of Sleeping Beauties, it's actually Kawabata is the character. Kawabata is coming to write about this actually secret brothel where the men sleep next to unconscious women. They just sleep next to them. They don't do anything to the women. They're just sleeping next to them. But still, the fact that they're sleeping next to unconscious naked women, it's a big secret, and he's going to write about it and destroy the house, possibly. And that one is actually based on, the House of Sleeping Beauties is based on Yasunari Kawabata, the Nobel Prize winning writer's story, The House of Sleeping Beauty. Hmm. But so in it, Huang puts the character as writing the work of art, and then so his life and art kind of become united.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also sort of a comment on the artistic process itself, that play, and that's the main difference.
So he comes to the House of Sleeping Beauties to sort of expose it and dismantle it in a way.
Yes.
That's his destructive intent.
That is his destructive intent, although it's sort of a double objective because he also is very interested in what actually happens.
So there's an erotic pull to all this.
Right.
And as with most erotic pulls, he ends up being taken in directions he perhaps did not anticipate. Is that right?
Yes, indeed.
It was just a lucky guess.
Yeah, indeed. That's pretty much it. Yes.
Well, the challenge of having two one-actors, and I assume you have an intermission in between, is obviously because they're two separate works, they go in two separate places. And even though there are common threads between them, how do you sort of sustain, how do you make each one have a kind of an equal effectiveness, equal impact?
Well, the text itself, I think takes care of it for us in the sense that they're both very poignant in their own way. And then obviously we've underscored a lot of the parallels visually and spatially, and then, trying to sort of highlight different similarities. For example, Kawabata in House of Sleeping Beauties has a memory where he's talking about smelling a woman's hair. So then, we added that into Sound of a Voice. So there's kind of direct parallels to the summaries.
Those are the ways that you as a director can kind of bring coherence to the thing.
Exactly. Trying. Yes.
Well, are you enjoying working on this show?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. The cast is fantastic. They're so nice and everybody works so hard. They're so professional and wonderful. It's nice. I love war metaphors for theater. Some people prefer sports metaphors, but I prefer war metaphors.
So you're ready to do battle.
Yes, everybody has to be working their hardest, or else you fail, you lose the battle.
Well, I assume the audience is not the enemy, right?
No.
Your allies.
No.
Tori, great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
Tori Kinoshita is the director of the Hawaii premiere at Kumu Kahua Theater of Sound and Beauty, two one-act plays by David Henry Huang, and details are on our website, hpr2.org.